First public hearing is subdivision 2006-67, CH3 LLC, in care of John Herholt.
Mr. Chairman, this is application of CH3 LLC, in care of John Herholt, to consider the subdivision of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district in Cedar Creek Hundred, Sussex County, body bodying 166.14 acres into 99 lots, located west of Road 216, 4,300 feet southwest of Road 214. This application was reviewed by the Technical Advisory Committee on May 23rd of 2007. That report will be made a part of the record for this application. On March 31st of this year, the applicant submitted a revised preliminary plan. I believe each of you has been provided with a copy of that. Does anybody need one? On May 13th, the applicant submitted an exhibit booklet containing a project summary, plan considerations, and compliance with Section 99-9C, a copy of the subdivision application, a copy of the fee receipt, a copy of the public hearing notice. There was also a copy of the preliminary subdivision plan, a copy of the proposed restrictive covenants, a copy of a tax map, an aerial map and FEMA flood map, a copy of the PLUS application along with the comments in response to the PLUS comments. There was also a copy of the Technical Advisory Committee review, a copy of a wetlands investigation report, and copies of letters from the Office of State Fire Marshal, Sussex County Mapping and Addressing, Delmarva Power and Light, and DelDOT. And that exhibit booklet will be made a part of the record. And we received a letter from Mr. Robertson, and he's reviewed the restrictive covenants. So I have, unless you have any questions.
All right, sir, we thank you. And the chair recognizes Mr. Murray.
Good evening. My name is John Murray. I'm a project manager with Kircher Engineering. I stand before you tonight representing CH3 LLC, Mr. John Herholt, who is here this evening with me. CH3 LLC, as mentioned, is proposing to develop a 99-lot single-family home subdivision on a 166-point.
Excuse me, Mr. Murray. We have a new procedural question that I need to ask that I forgot, and that is there anyone here with an interest in this application? Anyone here for this one? Okay, very good. Just wanted to know that you were here. Go ahead.
As I was stating, the application is a proposal for a 99-lot single-family home subdivision located on approximately 166.14 acres, located southeast of Lincoln on Benson Road. The plan for the community is the 99 single-family lots, all of which are minimum 3/4 acres in size. The actual average lot size for the homes within the community is 41,949 square feet, so the average size is just under 1 acre per lot. With part of the plan, all homes would be serviced by individual lot wells, individual lot septic systems. The septic feasibility study was performed by Lanchester Soil Consultants for this project. Unfortunately, when we submitted our development booklet for this project, the soil scientist had yet to supply a copy of the report. I don't know if Mr. Robertson can accept it.
Yeah, I'll take a look at it. I don't think
it's not something we understand that it can't be made part at this time of the record, but we just wanted to make sure that you did have a copy of that.
So you don't have DENREC's feasibility there?
No, actually, I was about to mention. Okay. The report itself by Lanchester Soil Consultants was submitted to DENREC for review and comment. DENREC did have some comments. They had a few additional borings that they were going to require from the soil scientist before they issued their feasibility statement. That activity was performed approximately 3 weeks ago, and so septic feasibility for the site is still pending. Also, we'll mention that the copy of the subdivision plan was submitted to the Delaware Department of Transportation for technical review and comment in an effort to obtain the letter of no objection. We did receive comments from DelDOT, but unfortunately, one of those comments regarded working with Delmarva Power and Light, PEPCO Holdings, for permission to access the property through their easement. It took some time for PEPCO to get back to us, but we obtained the license agreement, which is actually in your booklet. under Appendix 5, and that was submitted to DelDOT to satisfy their letter of no objection requirement. So a letter of no objection for this property is also pending. As part of the development plan, there are approximately 54.78 acres of open space on the site, which it comprises almost 33% of the site. Of that 54.78 acres, 21.9 acres approximately is designated for permanent preservation, whether that be the wetlands that were delineated on the property, wetland buffers that have been provided as part of the subdivision plan, or the 30-foot wide landscape buffer that's been provided on the plan. If you'll notice on your plan, the 30-foot wide forested buffer is located on the southern side of the property, adjacent to the lands or the along the property lines commonly shared with Phyllis and Clarence Levy. The 50-foot wide forested buffers or wetland buffers were what was added to the plan and the reason for the resubmittal of a revised subdivision plan. Located on the northwest side of the property is Church Branch, which runs along approximately lots 10 through lot 20. There's also a tributary of Church Branch that runs between what's identified as a subdivision of the lands of Draper Foods and approximately lots 39 through 30. In the original subdivision plan, the plan that was submitted to TAC and the plan that was submitted to PLUS, those wetland buffers were not included. So that is something that after the fact we went back, took a look at the subdivision plan and addressed some of the state's comments by adding those buffers. As was mentioned, the access for this property is actually through an easement that is held by Delmarva Power and Light or Pepco Holdings. The Harholt family actually owns quite a bit more property than what is shown on this plan. There's an additional approximately 150 acres that's located to the north that's also still in the name of the Harholt family. And when the easement was granted, we had to run through Pepco Holdings in order to get their permission to use it as access. Again, the license agreement by Pepco has been issued, and that's something that's being acted on by our client in order to make the permission to use that for our access official. As was mentioned, the wetland delineation report that is in your booklets was prepared by JCM Environmental. As was mentioned, we did have some wetlands on the site in the areas of Church Branch and the tributary of Church Branch, but again, none of those wetlands are made part of the development. They are all going to be permanently preserved. The project itself, if you'll look in Appendix 2 of your booklet, is located within 2 miles of several other subdivisions in the area. Most notably, down at the intersection of Road 38 and Route 30, there are several subdivisions, Windancer, Jefferson's Crossroads, King's Crossing, Village of Jefferson's Crossroads, and Heritage Farms. Most recently, the commission granted preliminary subdivision approval for a subdivision known as Winding Brook Estates, which is also located off of Route 38. And you can also on this plan see our proximity to Lincoln and several other subdivisions that are located to our north. The development scheme for this project by our clients was for the preservation of open space. If you look at your subdivision plan, you can see that the vast majority of the subdivision lots are located adjacent to open space. There's only about 6 or 7 lots that don't have immediate access to the open space. The plan is that other than the areas that will be permanently preserved, whether they be in buffers or the wetlands, whatever space is not necessarily necessary for stormwater management will be left permanently preserved and wooded. The whole site is wooded now. So there are no amenities planned for this community. It was the Harholt family's wish to leave as much of the property wooded as possible. That's the other reason for creating the larger lots and not going with a higher density. The density for this project is only 0.6 units per acre. The Harholt family has owned this property for a little over 10 years, and they do still continue to farm it. It is their, continue to hunt it now, and it is their intent to continue hunting the property to the north of this. So something that was not mentioned in the covenants restrictions was that they would be providing, if the application was acted upon favorably, a hunting notice in the deed restrictions or in the deeds for the community. And that's about it. That's all I have to offer. I'm here to answer any questions you may have.
All right, sir. We thank you. We'll see if anyone has any questions for you. We'll start with Mr. Burton.
Thank you. Can you review the wetland buffers with me again?
Sure.
When the plan was
When the plan was originally submitted with the application, the only buffer that actually at the time we did not provide any buffers whatsoever on the plan, namely because the majority of the properties adjacent to us were all completely wooded. Since that time, when we received the Technical Advisory Committee comments, initially we provided the 30-foot forested buffer, which is located along the southern property line here. After further review of the Technical Advisory Committee comments and after witnessing the action of the Commission on several previous applications, we went back to take a look at the plan as to where the wetlands were located on the property. So again, along the northwestern side of the property, I'll just say the western side of the property, where Church Branch is, the area was delineated as wetlands. And then there's a tributary of Chapel Branch that runs between Integral Foods lots and lots 30 through 39 in this area here. So what we've done is we've provided a 50-foot wide wetland buffer in that area. It's not a wetland easement, it's a true buffer. So it's an area that will be permanently preserved. It's not a portion of any lot.
And on the back side, is there a buffer on the back of the branch? The branch is further back?
Yes. Yes, along Chapel Branch as well. If you'll notice on your plan, we've also provided the 50-foot wetland buffer, which spans approximately from lot 20 up to the area identified as a stormwater management area. Along Chapel Branch, there's also that 50-foot wide buffer set back from the wetlands that were located along Chapel Branch.
The easement that's shown there in the crosshatching goes almost to the entrance.
Yes.
Tell me why it doesn't go all the way to the entrance.
I think it was just because there was some forethought that was attempted to be put into the nature of how this subdivision may be created. Prior to Kircher Engineering, at least us being involved in the project, there was a minor subdivision of these lands. That minor subdivision plan was prepared by Compass Point Associates surveyors. And when it was done, the easement area that we show, if you'll notice, we reference the deed book and page of that easement is shown where it was taken from. So the easement is shown, it's our belief, at least it was put there in forethought to providing access to the community. Unfortunately, due to the nature of where the wetlands are located, where the subdivision road is proposed to be located in the community, it doesn't quite reach far enough. There also is no true record of when the minor subdivision was done that the easement itself was passed through Pepco Holdings and Delmarva Power and Light to get their permission for the easement. So the easement exists on a plan that was recorded for the minor subdivision, but we found that we would have to go through a further due diligence process and an agreement with Pepco to be able to gain the access to the community. So that is something that we've worked with Pepco. They released the license agreement for it, and that's something that if the commission acts upon it favorably, that's something that our client is going to be. It's a legal description of the easement that's being given. So that's something that will be acted upon with Pepco for the access to the community.
And that will essentially go up past the entrance or go all the way to the end of the property?
We would only leave it up to where we need to access the property. I mean, there is virtually no need to continue past that point. I mean, there's a distinct clearing in that area for the power lines that Pepco owns and maintains. There'd be no reason for us to go further to the northwest. So it would only span to the area where we would need to get our right-of-way to enter into the community.
Okay. In the book here notes that coming in on that entrance, please note that no property lines are within the areas identified as wetlands, and only the entrance roadway encroaches upon the delineated wetlands environment. Is that that area right there?
Correct. In this easement area where the entrance would be, Pepco Holdings and Delmarva Power and Light have a service road that passes through there now. The service road has two stormwater management pipes that run underneath of it, and from what we understand from Pepco, they get frequently clogged by beaver activity. So being that the access is only approximately 12 feet wide, and by county standards, we need a 50-foot wide right-of-way, a 20-foot wide road to get back in there. There's so much of an area that we will have to improve to meet the county standards for the roadway access. So we've been working with the wetland delineator for the project and the Army Corps of Engineers to work on an application procedure for accessing the property. So there is an area where there would be some bulkheading and removing the existing pipes, which are partially crushed, and providing an improvement in that area, which would be used for the access to the community, and it would also still be used by PEBCO for the access to their lines.
Would it interfere at all with that pole?
No.
Right there?
No. In fact, we had to prepare for PEBCO prior to them releasing a license agreement. We had to prepare an exhibit plan showing the roadway access from Benson Road to the access to the community. The original alignment that we had for the roadway was simply a straight alignment holding a certain distance off of our property line and heading back to access the community. PEBCO's plans were to put a new pole out at that location, and they sent us the location of where that pole was going to be placed. So the alignment of the roadway was revised to get around that pole in a safe fashion in order to get back into the community.
Okay. So there's going to be a bridge structure in a roundabout way where that little chain fence goes across.
The thought was a bridge initially, and we would prefer to go the bridge route, but Delmarva Power and Light would prefer not for there to be a bridge. They'd prefer for there something to be a little different back there. They were preferring just a sheer bulkhead in that area, some larger arc culvert pipes to go underneath of there to assure that there would be no flooding. That was their preference.
But, and Delta has issued a letter of no objection? Or
We're waiting for it. They actually submitted comments to us, things on the plan that we wanted to revise, a right-of-way dedication to them, et cetera. But one of their comments in order to release the letter of no objection was we had to have permission from Delmarva Power and Light to use the easement for access. It took some time for PEBCO Holdings and their legal department to prepare the license agreement and review the plans. So the agreement that's in the packet that you received, that's the final legal agreement that would be enacted between our client and PEBCO Holdings. And that has been submitted to DelDOT back in the middle of April. And we're just waiting for them to go through their process in terms of releasing the letter of no objection.
And the okay. I have no further questions.
Johnson. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Murray, when was your response to the plus comments made? I appreciate your superimposing the comments, but couldn't determine when your response was submitted to them.
I do have it in our project file. Unfortunately, it's not in the booklet.
Okay.
I can provide that to you. But I would say it was, I believe it was probably about 3-4 months after we actually had the meeting with PLUS.
Okay. And one thing I see missing, staying on the PLUS comments, is I don't see the PLUS response to your comments. Is that provided somewhere here in the book that I don't?
I don't think it's in there. That's something that we can provide. They did issue, I believe it was about a one-page response that they addressed to Mr. Lank, and it was also supplied to us. They didn't necessarily like a couple of our comments, one namely being that, understandably, this project is in a level 4, and typically when we go in front of the PLUS board and we have a project that's in a level 4, we tend not to get project-specific comments. We tend to get blanket comments that are simply objecting to a project being located in a level 4 area. But when we issued our responses and we received the response back from Constance Holland's office, one of the things that they stated was that in our response, and if you look in our responses, we had stated that the low-density development for the community and the amount of open space provided lends us to be able to provide more of a preservation of some of the resources that are already on the site. Constance Holland's office response to that was that if there was to be a true conservation movement, then the development wouldn't be created in any way, shape, or form.
That's usually a plus response.
We understand the response, but it was not included in the packet, but that is something that we can provide to planning and zoning.
Mr. Johnson, just for the record, Mr. Abbott pulled out. We have a copy of it in our files here for planning and zoning.
Okay.
If you want me to pass it down.
That would be great. Thank you. Sometimes we differ on some of our feelings, Mr. Murray. And one of the things I do differ is I think in this case, the PLUS did provide some specific comments or responses to your project, and I don't see where they were answered. And let me start with number one, with the dealing with the 99 individual septic systems. On page 4 of 27 of the plus comments, they were very specific in that they had concerns about the individual septic systems rather than a community system. Given that this location, this project is located in a state resource area, as well as an excellent recharge area and being in a floodplain. How might you respond to that?
Well, of course, our feeling is that with the community septic area, it's not as if we're necessarily objecting to doing that. It's just that the family, again, has owned this property for some time. They hunt this land now. They're going to continue to hunt the land to the north. Doing the community septic area would require much of a mass clearing of trees and some of the resources that are out there to actually create that area. Now, if we did that, we could also cluster the homes and create a higher density, or at least propose a higher density than what's there. Our feeling always is that, of course, with the septic feasibility having to be completed by a reputable soil scientist, we're going to get those results, interpret those results, and if the application is even acted upon favorably and we're moving forward at that point, that the septic systems for all the homes would be prepared by a licensed septic designer and approved by Denerec to meet their standards for wastewater treatment. With that, I believe it was also one of our responses in PLUS that we would hope to alleviate some of their concerns in terms of the recharge on the site by maximizing our use of BMPs on the site in terms of stormwater management, if we were to get that far. The soils on the site are actually excellent. If you can see by the topography on your plan that everything in the middle of the site is a high area, and you don't get a steady fall off on the site until you get near either Chapel Branch or the tributary of Chapel Branch, we have very sandy soils on the site, which lends us to be able to provide stormwater management practices to meet those BMP standards where we can aid the recharge of the groundwater in that area and providing more clean water into that area. So.
And as a project manager for an engineering firm, what would you say is better for the environment, 99 individual septic systems or a central community system?
I mean, I don't design septics for a living, but from what I've come to understand in terms of the septic design, of course, Denerec always says, or septic designer always tell you that once the design is done correctly, that technically the water that's taken from the field once treatment's all said and done is safe water, almost to drinking water standards. Not that I'd want to try it, but...
Why is you had agreed to drink it?
No, I wouldn't want to drink it, but that's just namely coming from the source. But by their standards, I would say that whether it's 99 different systems or one individual system, they're all going to be designed to the same standards. And in my opinion, I'd think that the more systems, although it would seem that it would be, you know, to some more of a detriment to the environment, I would think that it provides micromanagement of the wastewater design for the community because it allows you on an individual basis to evaluate those lots and determine what the best design is going to be for those septic systems. I mean, the feasibility statement that we're required to obtain from Denerec is more of a blanket statement for the general site conditions. But of course, if you're moving that far, each of those 99 lots is going to have to get evaluated independently for its own design standards. So
is that a long answer to say that 99 is better than one, or?
I honestly would feel that 99 would be better than one in this case, just because of the micromanagement involved with 99 systems rather than one system.
I don't have any more questions at this time, Mr. Chairman.
All right, sir. Mr. Gordy?
What's the percentage of woodland area on the property? How much wood?
Currently?
Yes.
It's about 100% wooded now, about moderately aged woods. It's not a very large tree stand.
Okay, and which percentage are you attempting to preserve?
I'm sorry?
What's the percentage of the woodland area that you're going to preserve?
Well, again, the plan itself calls for just over 54 acres of open space. And that's a combination of the buffers that are provided, the open space, and stormwater management areas. 21.9 acres is actually either wetland areas, wetland buffers, or the forested buffers that will most certainly be permanently preserved. The additional open space on the site, of course, with the lots being almost an acre in size, there'll be quite a bit of clearing that will not be necessary in order to place a home and a septic on those lots. I think when we responded to PLUS and we did a conservative estimate on the clearing that would be involved per lot, you're looking at about 20% per lot. If you're looking at what the covenants and restrictions call out for the home size, which they're calling out a minimum of 2,200 square feet with a septic system. So we've delineated areas based on the results of the soil study where we would have true open space, which you can see here is an area of 4.6 acres, and here there's a 5.45 acres. We have a couple areas where the soils were a little better in terms of recharge with our infiltration rates we were targeting for stormwater management. We don't know at this time how much of that area would be needed for stormwater management because, of course, we haven't moved that far in the process. But the Herholtz wishes to preserve as many trees as possible on this site. So
is there any restrictions against clear-cutting a lot? Or
I don't believe in the covenants restrictions there was a true restriction on clearing the lot, but I don't think that that is something that they would be adverse to adding. In fact, when our client first approached us and their desire was to provide as much open space as possible, one thing we brought up to them was in the covenants restrictions, creating a tree replacement ordinance, setting a minimum diameter size to the trees that would be removed and doing possibly a one-to-one or at least a one-to-two replacement of the trees that would be removed if over a certain caliper.
And one more question. How are you going to prohibit the cutting or building of trees or building of buildings in the wetlands area?
Well, those areas, the wetlands, of course, are independent of any lot areas, and there's a buffer that's 50 feet wide that's situated between the lots themselves and the wetlands themselves. So with the exception of the roadway area coming in where we're improving the service road that DPNL already owns and maintains, there wouldn't be any clearing. I mean, it would be something where if someone were to be doing any clearing in that area, it would most certainly be done illegally. It's an area where that open space is going to be in the covenants restrictions of the maintenance of the homeowners association that would be created.
Will a wetland area be designated
as open space?
No.
Or just designated as permanent preservation?
Designated where the lot owner would know where the buffer area starts. How will they know where the buffer area starts?
I would think that when we go out and a surveyor were to place the markers for each individual lot, then of course they're going to have their individual survey and they're going to know where the bounds of their properties are. In this situation, there's going to be a 50-foot buffer area between the wetlands and their lot, so it would be pretty easy at least to establish the property markers for each individual lot and so those individuals know where the bounds of their properties are.
All the questions I have.
All right, sir. Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Murray. Did you make a provision for sidewalks and streetlights in the layout of the...
Oh, I did fail to mention the streetlights will be provided in the community. We've also worked on the preliminary plan we submitted to PEPCO Holdings, Delmarva Power and Light. We did notify them that if our application was acted upon favorably, that we were going to have to provide a covered bus shelter at the entrance. In discussions with our clients, they're not adverse to providing a sidewalk on one side of the road throughout the community. It's something that we had actually discussed in terms of providing some sort of interconnection and pedestrian access throughout the community. So that is something that they would propose and would be willing to provide is a designated pedestrian walkway on one side of the road.
Do you have an idea of what type of home, minimum square footage valuation the community will market to?
Well, the covenants and restrictions themselves specify 2,200 square feet as a minimum, and each individual home would be allowed to have no more than 400 square feet of non-heated, non-cooled space. So those are the minimums. The property owners themselves, the Herholtz, are not builders by trade. So they're looking to sell lot packages themselves. And their target it right now, at this time, of course, things may change in some time if we're moving forward that far. This time is around $90,000 per lot for all the lots within the community. Of course, some are larger than others, so the price will be adjusted. But you're looking around $90,000 a lot. They would be willing to enter into selling blocks of lots to particular developers and allowing them to build their particular products on certain lots. But of course, they will have to meet with the standards set forth in the covenants and restrictions. I believe in the covenants and restrictions, it mentions an architectural review. So that is something that they would have to go through.
Have you made an effort to let the Future Homeowners Association, the residents, just give them a guesstimate of what a yearly or five-yearly charge would cost to manage and maintain the stormwater management areas, some of the practical infrastructure that's going to go in?
Notifying the
The future residents, like what the value of a contract with a firm.
Oh, in terms of like
not
a
endorsing Envirotech, but a
right.
firm like Envirotech that
sure.
would patrol for nuisance geese and algae and make sure that the grates and all are maintained.
I don't recall in the covenants restrictions there being something specifically stating, that an entity would have to be brought in for that maintenance. There, because the draft covenants restrictions do call out an area where, of course, a fee would be established for the homeowner association dues. And I think in Mr. Robertson's response to reviewing the draft covenants restrictions, there was mentioned that there needed to be inclusions for the maintenance of the stormwater management areas and the open space. So it's hard at this time, without doing any engineering, to know, of course, what the fees would be or what would be involved in maintaining the stormwater management areas until we truly know what type of stormwater management area we're going to have. But I would think that once that's done, it would more than likely be in their best interest to contact at least someone to enter into obtaining a bid for that maintenance of the stormwater management areas. I think historically it's been found that if it's left to the homeowners association themselves, then the maintenance can tend to lag.
And your experience as an engineer, if your experience as an engineer were to find that these stormwater management areas do need maintenance to perform and function as they were designed, just like something else that needs to be maintained, you would share that information with your...
Oh, most certainly. Most certainly. I mean, there's a distinct difference between the maintenance responsibilities depending on what type of stormwater management treatment you have. Wet ponds themselves require much more maintenance than, say, an infiltration basin or, say, a BMP. Those are things that are more kind of self-sustaining and something that doesn't require so much maintenance. So it's something we definitely would not withhold any information from either a client or any prospective buyer of a lot within the community as to what could be anticipated in terms of long-term maintenance of that stormwater facility.
Where are they proposed to outfall?
Chapel Branch itself would be our outfall location for this project. It's something where, with the exception of the slope off of the back of the lots that are adjacent to the tributary here, which already flows through where the access roadway would be, all the stormwater management, once treated, would be directed to Chapel Branch.
What's the road cross-section going to look like in the... That's the question. If you're saying that you may consider at some point, if the commission didn't make it a stipulation, putting sidewalk on one side of the street, what's the other road section or?
Well, it would be like? Similar to the typical road section that's actually shown on your plan. If you look at the top right hand corner of your plan, as in all preliminary subdivision plans, we show what the minimum roadway cross section is for the county. What we would propose would be to hold that minimum section. So you're still going to have your 20-foot wide paved road. You're still going to have your swales. And then what would ultimately be created is along the frontage of those lots where the walkway would be, is we would create like a pedestrian easement. And then that's where the access would be placed. And then similar to, say, a community where if you have sidewalk and there's not a homeowners association or some municipalities are responsible for your sidewalk in front of your own house, what would happen is each individual homeowner would just be responsible for the maintenance of that portion of the walkway that runs through their property. And each individual homeowner would be responsible for that. But what that does is it allows us to hold the minimum cross-section for the county, because the swales, in terms of a BMP for stormwater treatment, are much more favorable to Deneric and the Conservation District than doing a closed piping system. And what it also allows us to do is put the walkway outside of an area where there would be a potential hazard to someone who's walking on that path. Because without curbing, you don't create a disconnect from the water running off the road crossing that walkway. Whereas if you put that walkway up in an area where it's distinctly separate and away from where the water conveyance would be, it's a much more safer condition.
Just one other comment, if I might. Do you see any possibility of increased pressure on the wetland area and that buffer area where you have backed lots up to the strip lots that are on Benson Road, County Road number 216, in the area of lots like 30 through 37? Looks like lots 30 through 37 would sort of back up to a wetland area and a buffer area that also backs up to, if I'm looking at this correctly, lots that were a subdivision of the lands of Draper Foods.
The question was, would we foresee an adverse impact to that wetland area?
Increasing the pressure on those wetland areas, as Commissioner Gordy had said, you know, how are people going to know that the wetlands are indeed there and should be left alone, as backing these houses up to each other? Is that a...
Well, I wouldn't think that there would be increased pressure, if you will, on those areas. I mean, that we're going to leave as much woods as humanly possible on this property, and that's the wish of the Herholtz. In fact, I think there was just an article in the Cape Gazette by a local biologist talking about the need to have these buffers from the wetlands, and it specifically was referring to buffers anywhere from, say, 50 to 100 feet, and how they actually create a much better condition in terms of treating runoff before any water or surface runoff from any site were to go into wetlands. I would think that by creating that buffer and specifically leaving it wooded would definitely create a condition where, I mean, we're not talking about a great amount of runoff coming from these lots, especially if the majority of them are completely wooded or virtually all wooded, with the exception where the home and the septic is. So I would think that the buffer would be appropriate enough to adequately treat any site runoff just from an individual lot before we're to go into that wetland area. I don't think it would create any additional pressure.
Are you endorsing the comments that you by this individual in the Cape Gazette, or are you just repeating them for our education?
It's something that I recently saw, and you asked the question, it seemed to go along with what you're describing, but... That the buffers are something that typically anymore are provided from those wetlands, and I think it's a good idea.
One last question, if I might. Do you see any red flags, orange flags, anything about regarding the proximity to what is known as Anderson Crossroads landfill?
No, I mean it's something where, I mean, the landfill itself is not, I'm not mistaken, directly adjacent to our site. And it's something where I don't think, based on what we're finding for the site from our environmental investigation and based on what the proposal is for the community, that there would be an opportunity for there to be an adverse effect on the community in terms of either draw for wells for potable water, et cetera.
So there were no comments by the water supply section saying, hey, you know, you may have a situation here?
No, we have not received anything. I mean, I believe in the plus there was notation of the proximity of where it was located, but I don't recall us having a notation regarding a concern for anyone who would be a resident of the community.
Thank you.
Mr. Counts?
Mr. Chairman, I got a couple questions.
Oh, okay. Mike? Go ahead.
I've had an opportunity to review the pluses response to the response to the plus comments. And Mr. Murray, one of the things that was very definitive in terms of their response to yours was dealing with the issue of the storm wet management area and their concern that they were too close to the sensitive wetlands. And your response to that was that they will more than likely be limited to those upland areas as identified on the preliminary plan, but yet I still see the stormwater management ponds being adjacent to the wetlands. Can you be more definitive in terms of what your intentions are in terms of the stormwater management facilities?
As of right now, of course, based on the soils investigation that we have, we are not limited on the site in terms of where the stormwater management would be located. So with that, there's not an area where we have such poor soils where we wouldn't be able to create a stormwater management structure and have it adequately service the community. The areas that we had shown on the plan were just preliminary areas that we had shown for stormwater management. If it would so be a motion, if the council were to act on approval, it's something where we could easily remove the areas identified along Chapel Branch that are stormwater management and just focus on, as we had mentioned in the plus response, keeping the stormwater management treatment areas to those upland areas, which are identified adjacent to, say, lots 52 through 54 and lots 48 through 51.
So then what I'm hearing you say is that, yes, they can be removed from the areas that are adjacent to the wetlands?
Yes.
Okay. In that same section, this is coming again from DENREC, there was concern about the Atlantic White Cedar wetland, and they were recommending at least, I quote here, that they should be left undisturbed with at least a 300-foot buffer. And they're saying that this is based on their peer review of scientific research. So if there's scientific research review is saying there should be a 300-foot buffer, while I appreciate the 50-foot buffer you're proposing, why wouldn't you be showing a 300-foot buffer?
I think it's something where traditionally, of course, when we're preparing these subdivision plans, there's a lot of things that we're taking into consideration with the planning aspect of it. And one of those things are our buffer requirements. We do understand that many times when we're submitting plans to PLUS, although we definitely, I don't want it to seem as if we do not appreciate their comments, we just tend to find that if we're in a project in a level four, or we've had other PLUS responses and technical advisory committee responses when we're adjacent to wetlands, we typically always find that they're requiring a buffer anywhere in terms of, say, 100 feet, and in some cases like this, they say 300 feet. But again, you know, we are following, you know, the county ordinance and federal ordinances and state ordinances in terms of how much wetlands we're providing. We understand a lot of those terms that they're providing more suggestions in terms of where they feel the buffer distance should be placed. But we also feel that the nature of how this community was designed, coinciding with the nature of what the existing site condition is in the woods and being able to preserve those woods, is going to create more than an adequate buffer from those wetlands in terms of eliminating any sort of impact to those areas.
Thank you. Now, giving you a break from the wetlands and the buffers, let's talk a little bit about your open space.
Sure.
Can you tell me how that open space is to be utilized?
At this time, any open space area that's not being permanently preserved by either the buffers or the wetlands themselves, what areas we do not need for stormwater management are going to be left preserved.
As woods.
Correct. There's no plan for any clearing of those open space areas.
So there's no plans for any amenities such as walking trails or folks having access to those wooded areas?
With the exception of the sidewalk that we'd mentioned being on the side of the road that we'd propose, there were no additional trails, no additional clearing that we were proposing for this site.
And did I miss something? Were there any other amenities that I didn't see, or there's no other amenities?
There were no amenities truly planned for the community. Again, the focus was going to be on the preservation of more of the tree stand, where there's not a plan for preliminary plan for a lot or the right-of-way for the roadways themselves. So that there's really not a desire, at least by the Herholt family, to clear what they don't need to clear. They'd prefer to leave it wooded.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, sir. Mr. Counts.
Thank you. Just a couple of questions that I think will help the commission on this case. Quickly, back to the buffer issue that was being discussed earlier. Are you willing to proffer that there'll be permanent markers for the edge of the buffer, the upland edge of the buffer in the field so that residents can know where?
I don't think they would object to that. I mean, so long as it didn't require any additional clearing, I don't think it would be a problem.
Monuments to identify the edge of the buffer.
Right. I don't think that would be a problem to do that.
And same with the silt fence not encroaching on the buffer.
Well, of course. I mean, the silt fence itself, I mean, when if we're going so far as to look ahead to if that were to happen and we're doing engineering, you know, the drawings and some of those to the Sussex Conservation District for review, we're not going to do any unnecessary clearing that's necessary. I mean, the clearing for the site would basically be limited to the right-of-ways to establish the roads and the stormwater management area itself.
Okay. You referenced the license agreement at the end of the book, and I assume that is going to be signed at some point. It also references a attachment A entry roadway. Have DelDOT or the County Engineering Department approved that attachment A?
No, not yet. I mean, it's something we haven't gone so far as to send into them yet because we're not past this stage yet. It's something that it would be designed, of course, to county standards. From a DelDOT standpoint, it would be outside of DelDOT's jurisdiction. I mean, the entrance would have to be what it is. And the response that we received from DelDOT does require quite a bit of off-site improvements to Benson Road itself, which is something that we would have to focus on. But it's not something we've taken so far as passing by the County Engineering Department yet. If we were to obtain preliminary approval and move that far, of course, we would have to meet with Mr. Baker's office to review the design of that.
My concern is that Delmarva is reserving the right to approve the design of the plan, and it seems to me that if they're going to retain that right, there should be some real close coordination with the engineering department and DelDOT to make sure that what's designed and is acceptable to them is also acceptable to the other party.
The submittals to those regulatory agencies would most certainly be done concurrently. At the same time the plans would be prepared and a true design would be performed and completed, we would most certainly submit to the County Engineering Department and PEPCO so that they could equally review the plans. And then, of course, if we obtained a response back from one or the other that would contradict what one of the others was asking for, of course, we would certainly have to draw those two sides into a meeting and discuss coming to a meeting.
Real quick, most of the site appears to be excellent recharge area. What are you doing to encourage recharge and avoid contamination?
Well, I mean, in terms of avoiding contamination in the recharge, our focus after getting our soil results is definitely BMPs and infiltration of the stormwater management. I mean, we don't want lined ponds out here. I mean, it would be more aesthetically pleasing to have lined ponds, but in terms of the BMPs, it gives us an opportunity to add to that recharge. Of course, there's no restriction on anyone in the county so far as if they were to establish a part of their property as a lawn and use fertilizers on their lawn. But again, the runoff from those properties is going to be routed through the stormwater management areas.
Okay. And lastly, your design, I'm sure you haven't got a design yet, but I'm sure you're aware of the problem with the appearance of blockage of the drain under the area near Benson Road. It's causing all the die off of the trees there. I assume you're going to address that issue with your increasing the flow of water underneath or wherever the blockage is.
You're referring to the tributary adjacent to Benson Road?
Next to Benson.
Yeah, I mean, the problem now is if you go out to the site, there's two pipes that cross underneath that road. One of them, I believe, is an 18-inch pipe. The other is a 24-inch pipe, and one of them is partially crushed. So those drainage facilities now are not functioning as they intended to. In fact, when I had met with Mr. Herholt back before at the inception of this project and this application, we had gone out to the site, and at that time there was just a moderate rainfall that we had prior. And because of the improperly functioning pipes, there was actually water coming up over the roadway because of the blockage created by the crushing.
You're going to correct that?
It would have to be. In fact, what we would be proposing would be arc pipes to allow a much higher flow rate through that area.
That's all. Thank you.
More answer? Mr. Abbott?
Good question. Let's tell him.
Council?
Yeah, just one quick statement. First, you mentioned the bus shelter. The license agreement that Delmarva Power, I guess, prepared says that you can't have any structures in that area, so that's going to...
It is something that we did bring to the attention of Mr. Williams, Calvin Williams, with PEPCO Holdings. It's something where, of course, we informed him that we weren't through this stage in the process yet, but we did inform him that it has traditionally been required that we provide covered bus shelters for the children. So that is something where he did tell us that if we do get past this point, that it's something that we can come back to them and that they would just want to have say and some review of what the structure would be prior to it being placed on the property.
I want to follow up on Mr. Council's question, and I want you to explain this to me with regard to this license agreement. I guess the access in general, because what I'm hearing is that you have an unsigned license agreement through a DP&L right-of-way where DP&L needs state and county coordination over wetlands that you don't have Corps of Engineers approval for. So explain to the commission how you have any access, really, at this point that they can rely on in approving the project.
Well, I mean, it is something we've actually already met with the Army Corps of Engineers about this. It's something that we started long ago. One of the first things that our client had asked us to do was to prepare an entrance plan and a roadway design through that area, and it was something that we had to provide to JCM Environmental, who did the wetland delineation, so they could begin the process with the Corps of Engineers for the preliminary design. And that's something that we have already actually begun with the Philadelphia District. So that is something that we have already been moving forward with. We have not gone through hard design in terms of actually grading the area, but it's something we have already actually, the County Engineering Department is actually the only entity that we have not passed the design through yet in terms of a preliminary design to get an idea of what would be approved. But I can tell you that the draft copies of the plan that were submitted to Pepco Holdings and submitted to the Philadelphia District would meet county engineering standards in terms of the right-of-way width and the roadway requirements.
But it still goes back to, explain to me if I've got this wrong, but a fundamental issue that you don't have even a signed license agreement yet that would give access to this project from DP&L. I mean, what's the status of that?
Well, the
and I guess why should the commission act on it based on an unsigned license agreement at this
point? Well, of course, the license agreement requires a fee to move forward with that for access for this community. If we're at a point where, for a reason that the application were not to be acted upon favorably, then there would be no reason for our clients, at least, to submit a fee to Pepco Holdings to finalize the license agreement. I mean, it's something that has to be done. If we know that we're moving forward, if we know that we obtained preliminary approval, then, of course, that's something we've already discussed, and that's something that would have to be enacted and move forward promptly.
So what you're
saying it's something where they're not going to release a fee to them if the application is not acted upon favorably.
Okay.
And it's denied, then there's no reason for them to pay the money to Pepco for the license agreement for the access for the subdivision.
So I think what you're saying is any approval would be contingent on getting all the agreements and everything from DP.
Oh, certainly.
Okay. That's all the questions I have.
All right, sir. We thank you. And thank you, Mr. Murray. If you would take a seat, we'll see if there's anyone would like to speak in regard to your application. Is there anyone here that would like to speak in favor of subdivision 2006-67CH3LLC? Is there anyone here that would like to speak in opposition to subdivision 2006-67? Yes, sir. You come forward and give your name, and you may have the floor.
Hi, my name is Ken Bass. I live at 9260 Benson Road, and I just moved from third worst traffic congestion in the country, Northern Virginia, to slower, lower. And I really like it here. And I didn't get a chance to see all of this. I've been to public hearings where the public, as well as you guys, got to see what was going on, because we didn't get to see this. this area we're talking about is a very environmentally sensitive area. And it's just a shame that the state or some private organization like the Nature Conservancy can't purchase this land, pay the owner enough money to make them happy and preserve this area. I know they did some studies, some surveys on flora and fauna, and I don't know what they came up with. I haven't seen that. But the eastern tiger salamander, which is endangered not only in Delaware but in Maryland and Virginia, occurs in this area. I took some photographs a couple of weeks ago of them. One of the largest salamanders in the world. They come out at night to breed in December, January, February, and during rainy nights, and I'm sure with increased traffic, a lot of them will probably suffer from increased vehicle traffic, probably decimate the population. There's only so many populations in this state, and one of them is right in this area. So anyway, that's about all I have to say. I don't know if that you have that on the list or not with your species, endangered species, but you can add that if it's not already on there. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
My name is Cheryl Hartman. I live at 10108 Benson Road. I've lived there for 27 years, and I'm a little nervous.
Don't be nervous.
Okay. I have a question concerning the wells and the septic first, and this just came up as I was listening to him speak. My understanding in having taken a civil engineering class, when you're dealing with wells, there's supposed to be 100-foot distance between a well and your septic. So if we're going to run 99 individual septic systems plus these wells on 200 by 200 foot lots, and you have a problem with either a septic or the well going bad, then you're looking at having to replace the well and then or the septic, and then you're dealing with another issue of footage and spacing. So your neighbor potentially could be interfering with you being able to put your well in another location in order for you to have access to water, and same situation with septic. Now, realize that, let me see, I was wondering about a traffic impact study, okay? It's another question that I have as to what would happen. I don't know if anyone here can answer that, or if a traffic study was done on this particular road. The other is the concern that they want to put the road along the power lines here onto a private road. So if that does happen, if you approve it, then my understanding is that the only, in talking with DelDOT, is that the only real responsibility that the person selling the place may potentially have is taking care of their access road, but not necessarily Benson Road. But so one of my questions is, you know, can the road safely handle the additional 200 to 400 potential vehicles that we could have? Because you could end up with 2 to 4 people in a household, and then have them on driving. We have a couple of curves. They're somewhat blind curves because of all the beautiful trees that we have on the road. The other is who's going to actually do something to Benson Road in order to improve it? Because right now it's like a farm-to-market style country road. It's crowned in the center, and you, as you can see here, even the school bus, when it's driving on this road, will drive in the center of the road as opposed to the right or on the right side. Also, it was pointed out by one of my neighbors that the area where they want to put this access road, the school bus is actually back in here to turn around. So what will happen at that point if this becomes an actual road into that community? And let's see. Who will widen the road, grade and pave it, paint lines, because currently we have no lines, and put 5-foot shoulders if possible, and some turn lanes?
I'm just interested to know how you developed those requirements.
What? I called DelDOT myself and asked them. I spoke to a gentleman named Derek. I didn't catch his last name, and I asked him about this particular site, Benson Road, and he looked it up while I was talking to him on the phone, and he said that improvements to a road when you have a housing development that large, okay, that it's safest to have 11-foot travel lanes, 5-foot shoulders, the lines be painted, and the potential for turn lanes. And that's where I got my information.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Very nice exhibit, by the way. That's very helpful. Yes, sir. Step right up, since you're already stepped up.
Yeah. My name's Mike Calloway. I live at 10200 Benson Road. Lived there for about 27 years now, 25, 27. Most of the people who live on that road have lived there 20-plus years. This is totally going to change the way we live. You know, we've moved out there for a reason. That was, you know, the solace of it. Nobody, you know, a few cars a day coming by, and that's it. And those are the ones beep at you because they know you. Animals walking, you know, the streets free. You know, it's just going to change our way of life totally. I live right at the corner where the proposed entrance is. I don't understand his buffer in the back, you know where the creek comes down behind us? Where is he getting the 50-foot buffer, the distance to the buffer at? You know, am I going to be able to look out my backyard and see somebody? I mean, that's, I'm not getting a clear answer to that. I don't want to see people. I don't want to have the people driving back and forth in front of my house, beside the house, pulling in there. That's my biggest concern right now. Thank you.
All right, sir. Well, thank you. And who's next? Okay.
Good evening, gentlemen. My name is Gary Evans. I live at 10366 Benson Road. We have concern of the rural area, the roads, but a couple of the questions that came up is, and I think the attorney addressed it pretty well, the bus structure for 99 homes, figuring that there's only two kids in 50% of the homes, is going to be a rather big bus structure underneath of a power line. And I don't know if that thought has been given to anybody or not, but and also that bus that turns around there, there are actual buses that do the U-turn or the back in there and make a turn on their runs right there in that development or that proposed development entrance. And those are the things I think we need to look at. Other than that, I thank you for your time.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Okay, way in the back there. That would be you. Well, here you go. Here's your opportunity. Thank you very much.
Jeffrey Fellini. I live at 10150 Benson Road. I actually live on the north side of where this proposed entrance will be. Okay. We've been living there probably 7-8 years, and we moved there because of the country setting, quiet. I grew up in Hokesson. If you all been to Hokesson? In the near future, I mean, in the present, where we live now is what Hokesson used to be when I was a kid. It's quiet and comfortable, safe bicycle riding on the streets, walking on the streets without cars. The picture that this lady showed was a stone, a gravel and tar road. Okay, that's 20 feet wide. I guess. I don't know. But it's not. My main concern is the traffic. When we say we see two cars pass at the same time, we have a traffic jam on Benson Road. Now, it's a very quiet, comfortable place to live. It's why we all, pretty much everyone here moved to this area. And, with the potential to live a nice, quiet life without any problems. And that's what we'd like to continue. As Mike says, it's going to change our life drastically with the traffic and, whatever environmental things happen. Like, this man says the salamanders. I'm witness to salamanders, lizards, numerous bird life, fox, deer, rabbit, you name it, we got it. It's a wonderful little wooded area there's actually two tributaries to whatever, one on the, one's right behind our house, closest to Benson Road, and then another quarter mile or so back, there's another a stream that runs, and that runs into, I guess they all run, I don't know which river they run into, but it's a beautiful, quiet country area, and I guess that's about all I can say about that. We're strongly opposed to changing any kind of our lifestyle and, changing the countryside to a point where it'll be Hokesson, the encroaching of, thousands of people into our little haven. So, thank you.
Okay, sir. Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
My My name is Fran Bass, and I'm also a new resident of Benson Road just this past year. We moved from Northern Virginia, as my husband indicated. I guess I'm going to be kind of a Jekyll and Hyde here for my neighbors, because although I agree with all of them that we all moved there for the quiet and the peace, Benson Road, unfortunately, in my opinion, has become a sort of a feeder road. And I do see the process evolving where the traffic is getting heavier. Traffic, obviously, coming from the Ellendale area, shortcut up Jefferson, and use us instead of going all the way to Jefferson and 30. And that traffic that I do see is increasing their speed. So I see the infrastructure possibilities changing where DLDOT studies perhaps should be looked at. I'm surprised that a traffic study isn't done on a road like this when you see the great difference between the country setting and the potential of the traffic coming with, as this lady mentioned, 200 to 400 other cars coming up that road. And I foresee it becoming an accident area and perhaps an area that your consideration has to be given to, that as this traffic comes out, we have to look at the roadway. Infrastructure, this 90-plus houses will increase the need for fire departments, and we know our fire department is volunteer at this time. Schools, of course, I'm sure you've heard all this before in other areas of the county as you develop, but this is all new to us in this section of the Benson Road, the county. Another issue I'm concerned about is the water source. We're all on well and septic, and you did a great job, in my opinion, asking about the water and the sewer and the buffers and the runoff. But what about the aquifer? And I would hope that the study was done that can tell that there is going to be sufficient water for this as well as other developments. We know that there's, I don't know the name, Sand something, the development down on Jefferson Road now that obviously is attending to that same aquifer. And I would hope that that's been taken into account. Wetland surveys and the streams were covered to a degree. I guess the other issue that really concerns me is for the neighbors that are adjacent to the property. I didn't really hear anything about buffers for the property owners that are already existing on Benson Road. And Mike, who's next door to the towers, some of the other people that are adjacent to that property, have a quality of life now where they have that privacy. And I know that there are some proposed ordinances in the county at this time for definite buffers between residences that exist and future ones. And I would hope that that's also going to be taken into consideration if this project is approved. Finally, the hunting. The Herholt family has obviously owned this property for a while. They certainly have their rights to develop and to look at it in an amenable way. Hopefully they are considering their neighbors in this as well. I heard mention of the landfill area. I know that the county owns some of the area back there. Again, I didn't get a chance to look at the plan. I might suggest that in future meetings, the people that are proposing would perhaps turn so that the members of the audience can also see what he's addressing in the future meetings. But the hunting concerns me. Because especially with 90 new homes coming in and you're going to have new people with children and families, you're going to want to, if the flavor of the country style is changing, then what about the hunting? Because that could be potentially a problem for those people coming in as well. And you may be having hearings, not planning and zoning, but commissioners in the future, supervisors of those people, saying, hey, what gives, we have hunting adjacent to our property. So that's something to consider. And I thank you, gentlemen.
Okay, thank you. Okay, who's next? Yes, ma'am.
Hi, I'm a little nervous. My name is Patsy Noonan. I live at 10248 Benson Road. This property would be adjoining, it's behind me. It is peaceful. I've lived out there for 27 years. I was one of the very first developers. And I just love it because of the peace and the quiet, and I love my neighbors. The north end of Benson Road is the Milford District, and the south end of Benson Road is Cape Henlopen. And that's part of the reason of the bus turning around there at the power lines where the Harolds like to have access into for this development. It is very, you know, there's a quite some of wildlife in this area. Lots of deers, squirrels, rabbits, you name it, they're out there. And it's a shame that this development's going to be put out there. So where are the deers and everything else, wildlife's going to go, you know? So that's a major concern. I see this 99 home development will also increase accidents due to a large volume of traffic that will be coming and going on Benson Road. So I hope you all take everything I say into consideration. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Yes, sir.
My name is Mike Cohen. I live on Benson Road, 10326 Benson Road. Well, my problem is, it's like the rest of them are saying, I'm against it. There's already two developments going in within 2 miles of this place, and they're huge. And a lot of those folks, if they're working, they'll be traveling Benson Road going towards Milford. It'll be like a quick connect up to 30 or up to 1. And I think it'll impact us quite a bit, and I'm against it.
All right, sir. We thank you. Anyone else? Usually it's one trip to a customer, ma'am. Okay. Yes, sir. You got to come up here if you're going to speak. Are you going to speak in opposition?
I wouldn't reserve anything I had to say.
Well, wait a minute. Hold on. We haven't decided you're going to say anything yet. Are you speaking in opposition?
No.
Then I'm afraid you're going to have to take a seat, sir. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Anyone else like to speak in opposition? Anyone on the commission have any questions? Okay, there being none, we'll close the public hearing. I want to thank you all for being here. I do wish to invite you to spend the rest of your Thursday evening with us to see if we make a decision, or you may just wish to call the office in the morning. If you do choose to leave, I would appreciate it if you would do it quickly and quietly, because we've still got some other business to do after you're gone. So thank you.